Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right. Welcome everyone here to The Thriving Marriage, the number one podcast about marriage in the world. Mark, thanks for joining me here today. Today we're going to be talking about three little known secrets to restore trust that your spouse won't be able to resist. And I want to make sure that you guys watch to the end of this episode today, because at the end, our marriage mythbuster is, I know that something has been on a lot of your hearts and a lot of your minds, and you really don't want to miss it. So thank you for joining us, each and every one of you, as we continue our mission to help thousands of couples create a thriving marriage. Now, before we go into those three little known secrets to restore trust that your spouse is not going to be able to resist, we're going to share our client win of the week. And this one is one of our dear favorites, comes from Leah. And I think this is an incredibly applicable testimonial and story here, because she definitely dealt with broken trust from her husband's affair when she first came to us. So Mark, you want to share Leah's story here?
Yeah, Leah commented here that her marriage has fallen apart. She says, I was on my last thread of hope when I found High Thrive Coaching through an ad on Facebook. And yeah, we do put ads on Facebook. She goes on saying, for me, it had been a sign from God. So I took that leap of faith, and now my marriage is thriving. We now have three amazing children and couldn't be happier. We meet each other's needs and work together as a team. Thank you, High Thrive Coaching, for giving me a better marriage than I ever had before.
Thank you, Mark. All right. So I love that Leah shares this here. And I just really want you to open your heart and your mind if you're considering wanting to have trust restored. Now, we did a poll and a question over in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group, and we asked you guys, do you think that trust can be fully restored? And we got 55 of you voted yes, it's possible. 27 said no, it will never be the same. In your comments, you let me know, a lot of you are saying, I hope it can, I really hope so. One person said, I think it can be restored in a relationship where both partners are trying, all right, and that if the partner that broke trust, they would need to be understanding to the fact that the partner is hurt and wants certain clarity, answers, and specific things to be able to feel comfortable again. And that's really wise, a wise comment I see there. And then some of you said, I don't believe it can ever be restored. If a spouse cheated, then no, betrayal is beyond repair. Even if you think it is, it will always come up. And so we see this all across the spectrum, right, Mark? We have some people that say, if an affair is a deal breaker, infidelity is a deal breaker for me. And that is a personal choice. But I also want you guys to understand that our evidence shows that you can absolutely heal a relationship, even if there are affairs that are going on. And it doesn't even necessarily take your spouse being willing to work on things at first. Okay. So I want to break through some of those misunderstandings and some of those myths. I know where they're coming from. There's a lot of pain and a lot of fear and a lot of hurt that happens when there are major broken trust issues, including affairs, but other issues as well, broken promises, you know, all of these different things that we have as far as trust goes. But that's why I love what Leah shared here, is that it is absolutely possible, even if your spouse doesn't want to work on things right away. And I think there's a great misunderstanding about this issue. And so Mark and I, we want to give some clarity to what you really can do if your spouse has broken your trust, or maybe you've broken their trust. While it is a personal decision, I just want you to open your heart and your mind to maybe considering some other possibilities. What Mark and I have seen with people like Leah, whose husband was having an affair a month before their son was to be born, said, I've been having this affair, I want a divorce, and I want to go live with this other woman. And he was not willing to work on the marriage with her. He would not attend sessions. He would not change. He had no desire to do that. And that's where Leah started. And to the place now where he left the other woman and they started to work on their narrative about what was going on that caused the affair to happen. And now they have three children together, not just their first son, but they have two more children. And I've asked Aaliyah personally, you know, what was it like going through that affair? And she says, you know, Heather, it was one of the hardest things I've ever dealt with in my life, as you all can imagine. But it was actually one of the best things because we have now resolved all of those issues that led up to the affair happening. And we are in such an amazing, beautiful place. And she says in her own words, it feels great and amazing to know that I get to spend the rest of my life with the love of my life. And so if your heart is speaking to you and you want to see what possibility there might be for you, then definitely pay attention to this episode today as we share these three little known secrets. Mark, why do you think that so many people out there say that's it? Like an affair is the end all. There's no ability to restore trust once it's broken. You just can't repair things if the damage has been that great. Why do you think so many people are saying that and feeling that?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors that play into this. Some people are specifically talking about infidelity when we're talking about broken trust. And that's just like one factor, like how big of a break in trust is there? And for most people, infidelity is a pretty big breach in trust. But we're also looking at, a lot of different things. If there's responsibility taken, after there's a breach in trust, if there's like a lot of effort from both partners to put things back together, if there's like a lot of it, like basically if you take the steps to process through the pain, process through what caused the breach of trust to begin with, like all these things are going to like add up to greater likelihood that things can be restored. I mean, if you look at the statistics, it's less than half of all cases of infidelity that result in divorce. I don't have the exact number, but I want to say it's somewhere around like 35%, which is not a huge number. So like, here's a big breach in trust, like infidelity, and it's only resulting in divorce maybe 30 to 40% of the time. And if there are steps taken to put things back together, then we have a relationship that can recover. So it like I said, it depends on a lot of factors, and that's kind of what we want to get into today. I think this is a huge topic. We could take the entire time and just talk about breaches of trust and infidelity, but I think we're taking the approach of a more broad trust in general sort of topic today, which I'm hoping is helpful for people here. So, Before we like get into some of these things, Heather, maybe we should just set the stage a bit and talk about just trust in general. Like, what are we talking about when we're talking about trust here?
Yeah. So trust really comes from the idea that I can be relied upon, right? Mm-hmm. My spouse can rely upon me and that I can rely upon them. And then the idea of expectations, right? So many people sit in relationships with a lot of expectations. And sometimes these are spoken and sometimes they're unspoken. And we're maybe stepping into one of the really common mistakes that a lot of people make of having these unspoken expectations and just assuming that our spouse knows what we're wanting or we're needing. And then when those expectations are unmet, that creates a lot of tension. It can create a lot of resentment and even loss of trust. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll just bring this home for a minute. If I have the expectation that my husband should come home every day and give me a hug and a kiss, which I do have that expectation, but I never communicate it with him, and my husband comes home and is on the phone for about half an hour, true story, I start to feel some resentment and some tension. And I feel like, oh my goodness, this relationship is not what it's supposed to be. What's the matter? Why am I not important enough to him? And those little bits of unspoken expectations that aren't being met create micro damage, which then creates a story, which then can lead to macro damage. and lead to major issues when they're not properly resolved. And so I've learned, yes, I know you want to interrupt me. I'll let you in a minute. you know, that those unspoken expectations can be really unhealthy and create a lot of these breaches in trust when we're going to go into the other side of what to do. But I'm sure you guys can guess one of our first secrets here is to have clear requests and clear expectations. And so when we meet each other's expectations and we know what those are, that's what creates trust. It's kind of like a trust exercise, like Anna in Frozen, because I have toddlers, so I hear that movie like at least several times a week. You know, and she jumps off the cliff and she's like, whoa, it was like a crazy trust exercise. But it's like knowing that if I fall, you're going to catch me. And that when you fall, I'm going to catch you, because we all fall in life and we all put ourselves out there vulnerably. And one of the challenges is that when we put ourselves out there and then our partner drops us and we don't feel like we got caught, and we all do that. And that's just part of life. And it's part of marriage. And so we're going to talk about what happens when that occurs. But when it recurs repeatedly, then we really start to feel like it's not safe to jump. It's not safe to be vulnerable. It's not safe to open up to you. Mark, your turn.
Your story reminded me of like of my own an argument that my wife Jen and I had really early in our relationship, where there were expectations there. Like I said, it was within like the first year or two of us being married, and Jen came to me like really upset one time, saying like, basically saying, "Hey, do you even care about me at all?" Like, and there's all these sort of statements, and it resulted from this situation where she went to go out to get groceries, and it was dark out, and the expectation was that I should have gone with her or stopped her from going because it was dark out. Like, it came from this thing where, like, this is what her dad did. Her dad, when her mom would go out at night, he would say, "No, I'm going to go instead," or "I'm going to go with you," just to be safe. And I thought, okay, well, like, my wife saying she's going to go get groceries didn't even register as a thing. Okay, she's going to go get groceries, and it's night time, and it's just on the street, and who cares? But you know, you also mentioned this thing here where, you know, when trying to build trust, there needs to be some openness or vulnerability. And you know, after we had a discussion about that expectation, you know, where my wife was really vulnerable and she's saying, "Hey, this was an important thing to me." Now we've come years later. It's not a big deal. My wife can go out at night and, you know, like, it doesn't mean anything to either one of us. But you know, we were able to have an open conversation where we were able to listen to each other and describe what our feelings were and what was going on. And it created more closeness or more trust. But like what you were talking about earlier with unspoken expectations, I do tend to see that that's a big area where trust starts to break down, is when those expectations aren't communicated, things are expected, and then they don't happen. Tends to be a huge area for loss of trust.
Yeah. And we also see, as we're going to get into here in our three secrets, is that sometimes you have spoken what you're wanting, like, "Please promise me that you're not going to look at other women on your phone, or that you're not going to, you know, talk to that coworker, or meet, you know, I'm not comfortable with you going out for drinks with that coworker. I'm asking you." And then your spouse breaks that spoken promise as well, or that spoken agreement. And so therefore trust is also broken. And we're going to go into that link there between openness, vulnerability, closeness, and trust. Because the more vulnerable you are with someone is allowing them to have more of a place of trust in your heart and in your life. Like, I don't really have vulnerability with the checkout clerk at the store, right? I'm not being really vulnerable with them. I'm not really trusting them. It's a different kind of relationship. And so as we go into this, pay attention to that link, that connection between intimacy and vulnerability. So now we know what trust is, the idea that we can be relied upon, and that when we are open, when we are close, when we are vulnerable, we are safe. And when our partner is open, when they are wanting to be close, when they are vulnerable, they are safe. And when we take some of those emotional risks, they're rewarded, right? When we do the Tracy trust exercise and we jump off the cliff, we're caught more often than not, right? And if we are ever dropped, then we take steps to repair. So that is what we're talking about in when we're wanting to have trust with our partner. So Mark, let's go into the first secret that is truly going to be irresistible when done right, which are those consistent, clear requests from both of you. So if the antithesis, right, the opposite of a good trust between you two, right, good intimacy, good levels of trust, is that there's unclear expectations that are not communicated clearly, then what we want to move towards are more clear requests from both of you. So Mark, what are we talking about with clear requests?
Well, you know, we were just talking about a little bit earlier that a lot of times expectations are unspoken. And, you know, essentially these expectations are requests from a partner. Like we mentioned, you know, a lot of times when these expectations are unspoken, it creates unintended breaches of trust. So when we're talking about like having some consistent, clear requests, you know, part of it is just getting the request out there. Actually making sure that everyone's on the same page in you know, in effective ways. Now, what I see a lot is, you know, we'll see from people, they'll say, okay, well, no, I was very clear. That they'll say something like that. I was very clear, we're on the same page. And the reality was that that wasn't the case. Or the requests, the clear communication was coming out as complaints rather than requests. And so things, there's lots of different like ways that clear communication can get gummed up and result in a situation where you and your partner are not on the same page. And sometimes that's just like hard to see. You know, I see a lot of situations like, you know, even in my personal life, my wife and I, we have friends where, you know, a lot of the discussions that we have are these friends complaining about the different things in their life. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I listen to these friends and, you know, I empathize with them and, you know, I might have some probing questions and I might ask, hey, did you talk to your partner about them? Just curious. And what I hear from these conversations is this kind of statement of, well, yeah, we had an argument about it. And it doesn't really get anywhere productive. Essentially, what I'm saying here is it's not going to be very clear communication. It's not going to be a very clear request if it's coming out during an argument, if it's coming out as a complaint, if it's coming out negatively. It tends to, you know, those sort of situations tend to put up walls. It tends to, people tend to resist having some understanding or empathy. And there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of things that can gum up having a clear request or some clear communication to build up some trust.
Right.
Yeah. Did you have some?
So I was going to bring up the drama triangle, right? That talked about. Mm-hmm. And that clear requests is we talked about in that episode, which I just absolutely love. If you guys haven't heard it, go back. We'll leave a link in the, you know, we'll put up a video here where you can check that out and we'll put in the description at the end because it's absolutely phenomenal. But clear requests are the way to step out of the drama triangle. And so for me, when I notice that there's any kind of, ooh, that wasn't, that made me flinch a little bit, you know, some of that kind of internal flinching. And I tend to just kind of brush it off or try to just do, you know, something, you know, sometimes it's withdrawal. Like I'll just withdraw from him because it doesn't feel quite safe. And I'm hoping that I'm not consciously doing this, but hoping that that's going to communicate to him that I didn't like what he just did. And I think that we go into a lot of that in the drama triangle. Mm-hmm. We do this withdrawal, or we do this manipulation, or we do this nagging, or this criticism, this blaming. Sometimes we do stonewalling. Sometimes we get volatile. And we're trying to show our partner, what you did kind of hurt me, or I'm not really getting my need met here. But we're not communicating that in a clear, healthy way. And I see this a lot with clients. More often than not, I see people not addressing things at all. Like, for example, I'll just anonymously talk about a recent client I'm working with. And when his wife goes out with coworkers, he just shuts down for several days and he never tells her what he's upset about. He never brings it up. And then all of a sudden he just snaps out of it and is pleasant and cheerful to be around. And they've been doing this for years, right? And so they're never really resolving the issue. And so I told him last week, actually, I need you to say it with a clear request, how you are feeling authentically. I feel insecure when you go out and get drinks with your coworkers. I would like to feel secure. Can you support me in that? Is that something that we can work together on and be able to do that as a team? Do you feel the difference? Like, so many issues that sometimes takes weeks, months, years, often even decades, can truly be resolved if we just communicate authentically. So instead of shutting down, stonewalling, getting grumpy, getting back at them, manipulating, nagging, complaining, criticizing, any of those things are only going to keep you in that drama triangle, and you're never going to resolve these issues, and you're never really going to restore that trust. So these clear agreements are absolutely powerful. So Mark, can you give maybe another example of a clear request that you've helped clients with? Because like you said, so many times people think that they're communicating clearly. They think that they're doing the right things, and they actually don't realize that what they're doing is completely backfiring or being ineffective.
Mm-hmm. So I'll give an example. I was actually just working with a couple the other day. And, you know, much like your example, one of the problems was the husband going out for drinks with friends and whatnot. And this was a situation that caused a lot of tension with them. I mean, he was expressing to me that, like, anytime that he was away from the home doing things with other people, that there was a lot of tension and sometimes arguments around those situations. There was complaints around the situation. There was, you know, accusations around the situation, like accusations from the wife about, you know, what he was doing and who he was with, and, you know, like these allusions to maybe he was seeing other women or something like this. But nowhere in that situation was an actual request coming out. And so, you know, one of the things that we talked about even just recently was, okay, well, what are the expectations around being able to go out and have drinks with friends? Ultimately, it came out that the wife didn't really necessarily have a big problem with that, but she wanted to make sure that her time with her husband and his time with the family, there was some protection around that. She wanted to feel like their time together mattered to him. And so, you know, when we got those requests out, like, it wasn't, everyone was on the same page. They wanted the same things. He's like, oh, of course, if you want me to, like, make sure that, like, I value our time together, let's do something about that. And, you know, and she's like, if you want to be able to go out with friends, let's make sure that that happens. And it wasn't like a big deal once everything was cleared up and we just had to, like, come to some sort of agreement there.
I love that you said that they actually wanted the same things, because my friends, as you're listening to this, you may think my spouse and I are on opposite ends of the spectrum. Like, there is no way that we want the same things. I would bet you money, and I'm not a betting person, that you actually want more of the same things than you actually realize. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of this drama triangle stuff is getting caught up and gumming up the communication and gumming up the needs that are being requested here. And I bet it would completely surprise you that you and your spouse actually want the same things. And then when you want the same things, you work together as a team, which goes to our next part. But before we get to the next part, I want you guys to, if you'll do an exercise with me, leave in the comments here the last time you thought that you communicated something, a need, or an expectation or unhappiness about something, maybe pain about something, maybe a boundary was crossed, maybe they absolutely broke your trust. How did you communicate that? Let me know specifically, if you can, what were the words that you used? Did you do it over text? Let me know, and we will coach you on what would have been a more effective way to do it. Okay, so we'll coach you live in the comments. We'll read all your answers and ask you some more questions if we need to, and coach you, because this is exactly what we do with our clients, right, Mark? Is mm-hmm. we show them, hey, you know, instead of shutting down for several days, or instead of manipulating and trying to get back at them, instead of saying, oh, well, I'm going to go out for drinks with friends now, and I'm going to go do what I want to do with whoever I want to do it with, right? Anything like that, we'll show you what may have been a more effective way to have these clear requests. So then you can realize that you're actually wanting the same things. And when you realize, oh my goodness, you put down your swords, my friends, you're like, we're on the same team. What have we been doing? Let's put down our swords and get to the next part here, which is creating some active goals together to get those needs met, because you both are wanting and needing very much the same things. So let's lower the defense mechanisms. Let's lower the misunderstanding, the unspoken expectations. Let's get on the same page, and then let's create some active goals instead of passive goals. Mm-hmm. So Mark, you have a little test here that people can use to see if they're doing this in the right way. What is that about?
Yeah, I always kind of find this question or this idea amusing. And I tell people, you know, like, I'll sometimes have to give some very blunt feedback with the goals that they set within a relationship. Like, I don't want my partner to lie to me, or I don't want you to cheat on me anymore. You know, as like a way to maybe build up some trust. And I'll have to tell them things like, you know, those kind of goals are, it's basically garbage. They're garbage goals, people. and so the test that I have is what I call the dead man test. If a dead person can accomplish the goal that you've set out there, you know, when you're trying to have some clear requests, then it's probably not a good goal. A dead person will not cheat on you, and a dead person will not lie to you, and they will sit there and they will not do those terrible things. The problem with these kind of goals is there's not really a good way to build up, you know, just in the context of trust, it's not a good way to build up trust with those kind of goals. I mean, essentially you're saying, I just have to do nothing and then it's okay. And yes, that can be fine and it can build up trust, but it takes so long to build up trust with passive goals. You have some consistency, like realistically speaking, if you don't lie and you don't cheat, then you basically that all you're doing there is you're consistently not hurting your partner, and that can build up trust. Just like I said, it takes forever. You can build up trust a lot quicker if you have those clear requests, and those requests are something that can be demonstrated, something that you can actually see is happening. They're active goals. So, you know, if you take everything into consideration, let's have clear requests. Let's make sure that they are, you know, requests instead of complaints. And the things that you're asking for are something that can actually be done instead of something that they don't do, you're going to clear away a lot of that gunk that prevents you from actually building up trust in these situations.
Okay, let's take it home one more time, because I really love when we can show an example of how this works in real life, okay? So let's say there is a couple here and the wife has had an affair and the husband is initially saying, I just don't want you to cheat on me anymore. And then working with you, you realize, okay, that's a dead man goal. Like, it does not pass our dead man test. If you go about it that way, yeah, she might not cheat on you for several years, but it's going to take a really long time to restore trust. So one of the secrets we teach here are these active goals instead of passive goals. What would you coach him on? And what would be like the first, maybe the very first initial goal? Because it's going to be a series of goals based on where they're at. But if she's saying, okay, I'm not going to cheat on you anymore, what would be the next goal that would be appropriate for him to make that would be an active goal?
Well, you know, if I was just working with this gentleman, if I was just working with one of them, you know, I'd want to make sure it's very clear whoever, you know, whoever is wanting more trust in the situation, I'd be, you know, coaching them on talking to that person about what they actually want. A lot of times it's going to boil down to like taking some active steps towards restoration. So instead of saying don't cheat, maybe the cheating partner is participating in therapy, or maybe they are cutting off ties from the affair partner completely. Maybe they are changing jobs. Maybe they are, you know, there's a lot of active steps that can happen there. And it really kind of depends on the situation. I could absolutely, you know, rattle off 10 different things to actually do to restore some trust in an affair situation. But a lot, like I said, a lot of that depends on who's feeling hurt and what are their priorities, and, you know, how involved is the cheating partner in this process, and so on and so forth. So, you know, this does take a lot of personalized attention, I think, if something as big as infidelity needs to be dealt with.
Agreed. All right. Now let's talk about our second secret here of creating trust restoration that's going to be irresistible to your spouse. Let's talk about the intimacy cycle. Remember, we addressed this a little bit at the beginning. So the intimacy cycle is really crucial to trust. In fact, intimacy and trust are like two ends of the same stick. You can't pick up one without picking up the other. If you don't have intimacy, you really don't have trust. And then we start to guard ourselves from being vulnerable, from having that intimacy when trust has been broken. So this is something that we definitely want to start to increase. All right. But we're going to do it with really small steps, not huge, massive amounts of vulnerability. Usually are not going to be well received. It's usually going to backfire when you try to jump too far. So really small steps to increase vulnerability is how you're going to win this game. Mark, what have you seen as far as this intimacy cycle and how it helps restore trust?
So, you know, this shouldn't be like this, any sort of mind-blowing sort of concept. Most people go through the intimacy cycle without being aware that it actually exists. you know, especially in like dating situations, you know, even in like the, you know, when I was dating my wife, the online dating apps weren't really a thing. I mean, they existed, but no one was really using them. But in any sort of dating situation, whether it's like the online situation, in person, we go through these cycles. We have some small steps of vulnerability, as in, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm going to express some interest. I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to invite this person out on a date. I might go in for like, you know, to put my arm around the date. These are some small steps of vulnerability, being open about expressing my, you know, my desire or my, you know, wanting to move forward in the relationship a little bit further. As those steps are received and made to feel safe and accepted, not judged, then we increase intimacy or increase trust. The mistake that I see in long-term relationships is, you know, there's some effect when couples have drifted apart. They've essentially gone into like a negative intimacy cycle. There are bids for openness. There are bids for vulnerability. You know, there's some amount of vulnerability, and that vulnerability is judged or unaccepted, and people drift further apart. And then the assumption here is, okay, let's take some big steps in vulnerability. Let's, you know, ask them to recommit to the marriage. Let's tell them to stop the affair. And you've come too far away from each other to make those big, big steps in vulnerability. So like I said, it's like most people are unaware that what is going on here. You know, you've all seen it in action. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in a relationship. It's just that, you know, being a little bit more aware of why this happens, why people come closer together, is really crucial for rebuilding trust. So like I said, just the basic thing is you build trust by seeing where the two of you can be a bit more vulnerable and being very careful about making that vulnerability safe again.
Love that. So my friends, as you're listening to this, Do you feel like you've maybe stepped into some of those common traps of asking for too big of commitment too soon, right? Large requests for commitment. You need to end this affair. You need to come back to me. You need to work on the marriage. You need to go to counseling. You need to change. I want you to be with me. I want you to commit to me. I want to know that you're in this for the long haul. I know that you're in this for our family, right? That's a really common mistake, and it is going to backfire. Intimacy, I think, is something that most of us can feel, maybe more than like intellectualize, maybe, but you can just feel that there's just distance or there's something off, right? You can feel that there's disconnection. You can feel that there's some separation. You can feel some loneliness. You can feel some frustration about not being able to share things. So do a little bit of a checkup here. And this is what we do, is we help diagnose kind of your levels of intimacy. They often correlate with levels of communication and levels of other things that require vulnerability, you know, including physical touch and sexuality. All of that is related. So intimacy is not just sexual intimacy, which it can often be mistaken for. It's the ability to be close and vulnerable in all areas. So think about where your relationship is and how out your partner is. And if they are really far out, then these smaller steps are going to be much more effective in drawing them back to you and increasing that intimacy than huge requests for commitment. Yeah. So Mark, do you have some examples of some small steps of intimacy here?
Yeah. So like you mentioned here, you know, some of the big requests just kind of fall flat in their face. But oftentimes, especially if it aligns with some of the things that your partner wants already, we can make some of these smaller requests, such as, can we have, you know, like, let's have some basic conversation. Let's create it. You know, you might have a request of, hey, let's create a situation where we can both talk to each other and it not turn into an argument. Or you know, if you're trying to build up some physical intimacy, so a small step might be, hey, is it all right if I just sit next to you on the couch while we watch this movie? Do you mind if I hold your hand? And it depends, like you were saying, it depends on how out your partner is. If they are absolutely saying, I am 100% out of the relationship and I want nothing to do with you, then even some of these requests might be denied.
Right.
This is why it's important to keep in mind, what are the common goals? What are the areas where your partner is willing to create more intimacy? And oftentimes, you know, a way in that we have with a lot of our clients is being able to parent well together, being able to communicate well together, mm-hmm. Being able to at least maintain some amount of friendship and the small steps that might be required to get to those areas. And we found that a lot of times when we take some small steps with better communication, better co-parenting skills, better amounts of respect, then it becomes easier to make some more steps in other areas as well. You know, yeah. Build up more of that romantic relationship once the friendship is a little bit better established.
Yep. So I talk to dozens and dozens of people here every single week in our masterclasses and on Facebook, kind of the front lines before they get to go do the coaching with our amazing coaches like Mark here. And I see a lot of people making this mistake of trying to resolve the deep issues too soon, pushing for commitment too soon. And they think that they're justified in a way, you are, but at the same time, it's going to completely backfire. Because if they're checked out and unwilling to work on things, then saying, well, you made a vow and you should keep your vow, they're like, don't care. Sorry. Or not sorry sometimes, yeah. Right? Because that's where they are. And that's why it's really crucial that we solve problems in order. And it's not a cookie cutter approach. It's a very specific, exactly where you are. So I would love to know, for those that are willing, and would love to hear from us a diagnosis of your intimacy level. Go ahead and leave in the comments or the chat here how often you're communicating, how deep your communication can go, how close you feel physically, sexually, spiritually, mentally, emotionally. And we'll start to diagnose and see what might be going on there for you, and what your next step would be to have a small step a common goal based on your level right now to be able to get more intimacy, which is going to be the first step, or, you know, one of the steps here of restoring that trust. So make sure that you don't do those huge giant leaps. Will help guide you on exactly what's appropriate for you and going to be effective the most right now. I like, there's a saying that says sometimes that to go fast, you need to go slow. Because when you're trying to go too fast, you're going to burn out and it's going to backfire. It's weird. It's a weird phenomenon. But sometimes when we actually slow things down, which is actually a lot what we do at the beginning, we teach you to take the pressure off, to increase some understanding, and to take these really small steps. Like Mark said, maybe it's about parenting, or maybe it's about talking about the divorce respectfully instead of blaming and, you know, pointing fingers and name calling, right? That would be a small step. And I know so many of you are like, that's not going to get us anywhere. It does. It's actually what's needed. It's what's going to be what's effective. That's why most people out there aren't doing this. That's why we call it a secret. It's not really a secret. It's just what actually works, but most people aren't doing it. And when you do things slowly at first, it's what builds up incredible momentum, and which is why we're able to help save marriages within several months rather than wasting years in therapy. So don't be afraid to go slow as far as increasing intimacy. All right. Let's talk about making things safe, Mark. Making things safe as we take some of these smaller, slower steps to increasing that intimacy.
Yeah. So, you know, if we're talking about intimacy cycle, you know, we need some of those small steps of vulnerability. But the biggest part of like what actually creates the intimacy is this component here. Like, how well is that vulnerability treated? I think there's, you know, just some general principles that most people tend to respond very well to, you know, just having some lack of a judgment or having some acceptance. And quite honestly, when I have conversations with couples and they're talking about what is wanted within their communication, what they're trying to improve, I would say the vast majority of my clients are saying, hey, this is what I want. I want more acceptance. I want less judgment. I think a good foundation for this, you know, in terms of what acceptance looks like, what it looks like to have less judgment. I think quite often of Carl Rogers, who is a big name in psychology. He founded the humanistic approach to psychology. He talks about three principles that creates a very safe environment. Now, if those of you that already work with us, you probably have heard this, but Carl Rogers, just to kind of give some background for the context of this principle, he was talking to students, to therapists, and talking about what creates a situation where people can trust their therapist. And I would think that this very same principles apply here. If you're saying, like, you know, in a therapy setting, why do people open up? Why do people actually, why are they so very vulnerable with these therapists? Well, Carl Rogers has some idea about what to create. He says, you know, three big things that are needed are empathy. He uses the word congruence, but it's very similar to this idea of authenticity. Can people be open in constructive ways? And then unconditional positive regard. So are you understanding your partner? Are you allowing them to be who they, you know, to be honest with how they feel? Are you being honest with how you feel? And as they are being honest, are you regarding their feelings? Are you regarding what they're trying to do as a default positively? And this might sound crazy. Like, I will tell people something like this, and they'll say, my husband is an alcoholic and is yelling at me. How do I regard this positively? And yet, I still think that this is a path to healing. Obviously, there is some need to protect yourself. There's a need to have boundaries. And that on the surface might seem like it really flies in the face of empathy and understanding and positive regard. Heather, I want to know what your thoughts are on that. Like, how do you actually have these principles that Carl Rogers teaches and have some balance with protecting yourself and having some boundaries so that you're not being disrespected. Like that, on the surface, it doesn't seem like it fits. What do you think?
Right. It doesn't seem like it fits when we're in our own story and in our own pain. Okay. Mm-hmm. But what I've seen really transform myself and many, many of our clients is getting to the place of, I love you for who you are and not what you do. Because when you get beyond the alcoholism, when you get beyond the yelling, when you get beyond the cheating and the infidelity, and you get beyond the manipulations or whatever the unhealthy thing is that they're doing that's hurting you, and you get to who that person is, and you see the hurt that's inside of them, that's driving them to do these things, and that they're just trying to cope, or they're just trying to do life the best way that they know how. And you can see their perspective. I say this, I think, every single podcast, but coming back to path method that we teach, when you step out of yourself and you step and look beyond what they're doing to who they really are, we find out that we're all the same. Like we are all the same. We are all pieces of the divine, and in my opinion, children of God. And we all are trying to do life the best that we can. And when we look at someone, we're like, how could they be doing that? How could they be drinking and cheating and, you know, cussing out their spouse or anything like that? But you don't know where they've been. You don't know what led them to do those things and what was modeled to them when they were really small and impressionable and didn't know any better. And all those different things that have led them up. It doesn't mean that what they're doing is right or that we're saying it's okay, but we're saying, wow, I can see where you're coming from, right? There's that saying, walk a mile in someone else's shoes, right? And that's a cliche saying, but there's truth in it. Why? Because it gets us outside of our own judgment and criticism and gets us to see that person for who they really are. In the meantime, as you can see that person for who they really are, and you can say, wow, I see that you're drinking because your father drank and he was abusive to you, and your whole life you've dealt with all this anxiety and you were bullied. And then, you know, when you went to your first marriage, you were cheated on and you have not resolved any, like you are holding so much weight of so much baggage. At the same time, I need to protect myself too. And so I need to honor myself and I need to put up some healthy boundary here to keep myself safe while still loving you for who you are, but not necessarily loving you for what you're doing and holding a space that you can become who I see you as, right? And that you can become better, but I know I can't control you. I can't make you do that. So I'm going to put some boundaries in place here to allow us to heal, to allow us to move forward and to give us that space that if you choose to, you can also heal. You can also learn from this. You can also get to a healthier place, but I need to do this for me right now. So I can't say that in probably any shorter way, but that's where we really come from in the heart of this kind of situation.
What I'm hearing, and I know Heather, like, you know, like you and I, we know how to talk about these sort of things because we talk about this all the day, but all the time. What I'm hearing, and what I didn't hear you mention though, but I'm sure you're well aware of, is a lot of your statements were I statements. Like, this is how I'm feeling. And this is what I need. And I can feel a lot of care towards you. Like, and very little of what you were saying in your examples were these accusatory you sort of statements, like you're doing this to me, you're doing that, and this is why you suck. I mean, I know it's cliche, but there's a reason why a lot of people talk about I statements is, you know, quite honestly, it does tend to make communication go a bit better. And I do think it communicates a lot of what we're talking about here when we're having to contrast boundaries and acceptance and empathy and positive regard. And
yeah. Just one other thing to touch on with that is that when it comes down to it, like forgiveness is not something that's necessarily earned, but trust is earned. Forgiveness isn't earned. It just is. And forgiveness is for you to help free yourself and help move yourself forward. But trust is something that is earned. And so having those healthy boundaries is completely appropriate as you're restoring this and healing the situation. And for me, the greatest levels of empathy come in my own heart when I can look at myself and say, if I deserve to be forgiven, then so do they. If I can be forgiven, which I hope I am, because I've made a lot of mistakes and I've hurt a lot of people, if I can be forgiven, then so can they. And it kind of breaks my heart when I hear people say, I'll never forgive or I'll never trust you again. And maybe you do these efforts and they aren't, your spouse isn't willing to make changes. And so you do not have that trust again. We're not promising that that's going to be the case, but we are showing the door if you're wanting to explore the possibility, right? And I hope that if I can, you know, like I'm just saying, like it breaks my heart when I see people say, I never trust you again, because don't we all wish and hope and pray that when we break people's trust, that we'll eventually be able to restore that trust again? Don't we hope for that same grace for ourselves? Don't we hope that even though we've made really bad choices in the past, that we can be forgiven? And so what we give to others is what comes back to us. And when you're unwilling to forgive and you're holding on to that, then, you know, just think about if someone was doing that to you and think about the choices that you've made that you hope people will forgive you for and want to work on restoring trust for you. That helps me get to a place of empathy and let's work on this thing. And it's not so much about you or me. It's about this issue and we can solve this issue, because my friend, every problem has a solution. Every issue can be overcome. Any sense of dysfunction can become functional. It's just a matter of learning how.
Yeah, I think a lot about this. I think the key word would be accountability when we're trying to have that balance. You know, if you can have positive regard and empathy, authenticity, I think if you can balance, you know, you can balance that out with boundaries if there's those things and accountability for what's done. So we've gotten through two secrets, and I'm looking at our time. We've really gone deep into just these two. Heather, do we even have time to go into our third secret today?
I'm thinking we should do a part two. Do you guys want a part two? Because if we do it right now, then we'll probably rush through it and it won't be as effective as it could be. So what do you think, Mark? Part two sound good?
Yeah, I think, you know, honestly, we could probably go really in depth into this third secret. It's a lot about how trust is built by having balance, by having, you know, by giving to your partner and being able to receive. And it's an odd thing. You know, a lot of people don't talk about how you can build up trust by receiving very well. It almost seems like an antithesis to trust. You know, a lot of us think of like, okay, if I'm going to build trust, I'm going to give to my partner. And an odd thing that I found is just it works really well when you balance those things out. And I'd like to talk about why, but I want to go in depth into it. And I think it would be better to split this into another podcast.
I love it. All right. So let us know in the comments what you learned today. What stood out to you? Was it about unspoken expectations? Was it about clear requests and healthy ways of resolving things, stepping out of the drama triangle? Was it more about taking some small steps here that are appropriate for where you're at to go slow so then you can go fast? Is it about making things safe, having a lack of judgment, having acceptance? And the last piece there was accountability, which we'll share a little bit more with you next time. So let us know what stood out to you the most and what you feel like is going to help you as you move forward in your marriage. As you share, you inspire us and you inspire others, which is a powerful way to be able to give back even in the midst of some of our biggest challenges so that we can all learn and grow. A rising tide raises all boats, right? So thank you guys for joining us. And I want you to comment trust if you'd be interested in hearing more about how to build up trust in your relationship, learn more about some of these common pitfalls, what not to say, what not to do, how you may unintentionally be pushing them further away, and anything you may be doing that's actually leading to more distrust and more distance and more lack of intimacy, and what you can do instead. And we will guide you on exactly how to do that. So comment the word trust if you want to hear more about how to build up trust in your relationship. And then we're going to go now to our marriage mythbuster, which is you'll be able to change your partner's annoying habits. I told you guys that this was on your mind. I know it's on my mind. Do we all have annoying habits? Yes, we do. Does our spouse have annoying habits? Yes, they do. And I've seen a lot of people think it's their like life purpose or their life mission to change everything that's absolutely annoying about their husband or their wife. And it just absolutely does not lead to happiness. So, Mark, What are we going to say about this myth here about you're going to be able to change your partner's annoying habits?
You know, so my answer to this, like, it was actually pointed out by a client last week. I was kind of surprised because I thought I'm, you know, super familiar with like all these little fun facts and whatnot. But, you know, something my client said last week, he said, oh, yeah, you know, there's that Gottman idea that upwards of 70% of relationship conflict is maybe unsolvable. And I was like, no, that can't be right. That can't be what Gottman said. You know, so for those of you who aren't aware, John Gottman is like the guy. He's like the person who does all the relationship research and whatnot. Research. And he has studies that span decades examining couples and just a wealth of knowledge.
And interestingly, he's been divorced twice himself. So he knows what creates divorce situations, having lived it personally himself.
Yeah, I think the big thing that he's known for is like, is those things that predict divorce. You know, like he got super, super really good at predicting which relationships would end in divorce, you know, and, you know, that's a whole other topic. But yeah, one of the things that he claimed was that about 70% of relationship conflict may be unsolvable. And this includes changing your partner's annoying habits. And, you know, when I heard that, I was like, that can't be right. 70% of my conflict with my wife, it's not unsolvable. But to kind of go a little bit deeper into that, like, because it sounds depressive. I mean, after all, how does any relationship survive if that much conflict can't be solved? So the claim, to clarify a little bit more, is that most conflict doesn't really need to be solved. It's much more important to figure out how to manage that, to accept the conflict or the difference of opinion, or possibly to repair it when there is damage. And so when we're looking at this situation of annoying habits, does it actually, you know, we might argue with this concept here, does it actually need to change? Do you need to change your partner's annoying habits? And I would say that in this instance, you know, if I could speak for John Gottman, he'd probably say, no, and actually it'd be better if you look at ways to accept those annoying habits, to manage those annoying habits, or to figure out ways to talk with your spouse and make things feel better when those annoying habits come up. I know between my wife and I'm not going to say I'm without fault, and I know I have some things that annoy my wife. You know, I might leave some clothes on the floor. One of the big pet peeves of mine is my wife will put empty containers back in the fridge. So essentially there is trash in the fridge. And, you know, I'm like, I could say, you know, this is essentially an unsolvable conflict. I could get really upset with my wife and say, why are you putting trash in the fridge? And I could make this a big deal. But, you know, ultimately what's happened is, you know, I've come to accept that, okay, I might need to clear out the fridge every once in a while, and that's okay. And, you know, my wife contributes in other ways, even if she, you know, happens to put trash in the fridge. You know, ultimately, I've gotten to a point where I can accept it, I've managed it, and it isn't a factor anymore.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't change my wife's annoying habit. So that's all I have to really say about that is there are a lot of things like this, even some bigger habits that you might say, okay, absolutely has to change. And, you know, I think it's useful to look at those things and ask yourself, why does it have to change? Is this something about you that you need to adjust? If it's not, then, you know, there's certainly options for changing those deal breakers. But, you know, on these little annoying habits, I think there's a lot that can be done to just accept and move on.
Agreed. So we're not saying, you know, brush aside major things and just put everything under the rug if it's a major issue. However, it's like, let's not make everything a major issue. Let's rate how big and important this is on the scale of life and happiness. And if it's significant enough that it's causing a lot of damage, then we definitely want to address it. But if it's lower on the scale, then let's move towards just acceptance, managing, solving, repairing. Maybe it doesn't need to be solved.
One more stat.
I definitely have those with my husband, and I know he has them with me as well. I tend to be a little bit of a klutz, and I tend to break things. I tend to accidentally damage things. And he is like the mechanic and the repair guy, you know, and so I know that that's really annoying to him. And try as I might, that's not a habit I'm going to probably be able to change anytime soon, being a little klutzy. And so he has done it, borne it with immense amount of patience and grace, which then gives me patience and grace for his need to play Farm Simulator for 6 hours on a Saturday. I've learned to accept that one because we all have our different quirks. And, you know, honestly, if we didn't, then life would not be nearly as fun. And we would not want a relationship where our partner was exactly like us, or truly make them into the person that you think that they need to be. You wouldn't like that person. I promise you. Who you married is who you married for a reason. So let's learn to give each other some grace and to not nitpick every single annoying habit. All right. Thank you, Mark. Now, I want to give you guys an invitation to subscribe if you want to see how we help couples save their marriage, even if their spouse is unwilling to work on things, so you can see even more great videos and content just like this today. And then comment a new word here called trust quiz if you just want to take a free quiz to see if it's possible to have trust again in your relationship. So comment trust quiz if you want me to send you that completely free quiz and see if it's possible to have trust in your relationship again. All right, next week, we're going to share with you part two of our trust restoration secrets that they won't be able to resist. And the third one that we're going to go into next week is awesome, and you do not want to miss it. So we will see you guys next week for our part two. Thank you so much, Mark, and we'll talk to you all again very soon.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.